All right. Hello. Well, it's good to be here. I am married to my wife. That's good. And actually, I feel like I'm home. We just recently moved to Durham, North Carolina. So the last 6 years I've been up the road in West Lafayette at Purdue. And I forgot how cold it is at this time. It's about 78 degrees right now in Durham. But I'm glad to be here. I'm excited to be with you guys tonight. And I have been asked to answer this question that you guys have been discussing all week. Is Christianity good for the world? And in case you're wondering, I'm going to give you the bottom line first. I would say yes, a resounding yes. Christianity is good for the world. But as you think about it, and as I read some of the comments that you guys have been making throughout the week, it might sound a little hasty to give such a quick answer. Yes, Christianity is good for the world. The reality is there's vocal voices in our culture today that say that it's not good for the world. That we shouldn't be religious at all. In fact, we'd be better off if there wasn't religions. And so what I want to do tonight is try to get a satisfactory answer, a satisfactory affirmative answer. And to do that, we need to sort of consider the case of those who say that Christianity isn't good for the world. Now, as we begin tonight, I think it's important to note, actually, though, I think there's a question beneath the question that drives this, drives the question we're looking at tonight. So the main question is this: is Christianity good for the world? But the question beneath the question that drives this question is, how can I find peace? How can I find happiness? And I think that's actually what drives this question. And when I say peace, by the way, I don't mean peace in terms of the absence of strife, although that's part of it. When I say happiness, I don't mean sort of the contemporary way that we understand happiness is maybe the satisfaction of sensual pleasure, but I mean a much richer concept. Both of those, peace is actually a Hebrew concept, shalom. And happiness is a Greek concept, a classical concept, and they both actually mean the same thing. And what they really mean, sort of in the richest sense, is a state of flourishing, human flourishing, experiencing life the way that it's supposed to be. This is what I believe we're all after, and this is, I believe, the question that drives the main question tonight. This is what drives it. And that's why this question is so important, by the way. And so we have Christianity. Christianity invites participation, as you just heard in the little dialogue with Mark and Brooke. It invites participation. It invites you to actually enter into the story, the great story of God as articulated in the Bible, and it invites you to find meaning and peace and happiness in light of that story. But as you know, it's not the only story out there today, right? There's lots of other sort of competing stories. And one sort of vocal story out there is sort of the grand story of naturalism. And on this story, the story of naturalism, it's actually been repackaged and championed by the so-called New Atheist today. They're sort of a very vocal group out there. And on this story, they want you to think that Christianity is not good for the world and that we all ought to be naturalists, we all ought to be atheists. Okay, so I want you to keep the question behind the question sort of in your mind tonight. We'll come back to that. And the reason why I want to surface that, by the way, is I want to suggest to you tonight the possibility that God is better than you think. Okay? I want to suggest to you tonight the possibility that God is better than you think. And in fact, all of our longings for peace, for happiness, for relationship, for wholeness, for meaning, for significance, all of these can be met in Christ. I've got basically 2 points tonight. So let me tell you what I'm going to do. The first one is I just want to... Okay, first point is that the new atheists are wrong in their claim that Christianity is not good for the world. So we'll need to sort of unpack that a little bit. I'll sort of try to articulate what their case is, and then we'll examine it. And so that'll be the first point, is that they're wrong. And then the second point is that Christianity is good for the world. And it's good for mainly 2 reasons. It's good because it's true, and being rightly related to reality is a good thing in and of itself. But it's also good because you get Jesus. And when you get Jesus, you get everything. In fact, I was just reading earlier this week, one of my favorite philosophers, a guy named Augustine, he wrote this little book called Confessions. And in there he said, he was writing his sort of confession to God. And in there he said that Jesus, you are the beauty in all things beautiful. And you are the good in all good things. And you are the truth in which all true things point. And so I want to sort of unpack that and make some connections tonight between Jesus and the good, the true, and the beautiful. Okay? All right, so that's where we're headed. let's just pick up that first point here. The first point again, the new atheists claim that Christianity is not good for the world. Let me just define a few terms. An atheist is someone who thinks that the proposition God exists is false. So an atheist believes that there's no supernatural reality in the world, and therefore, most atheists are also naturalists. And so the way that you sort of account for reality is you explain it naturalistically, through science. And so science sort of explains all of reality. And as of late, there's been these defenders of new atheism, folks like Richard Dawkins, Christopher Hitchens, Sam Harris, and others, that have basically argued that religion in general and Christianity specifically are actually dangerous, they're delusional, and they're destructive. So we need to kind of take them serious. We need to understand what are they saying? What is their claim? Let me just give you a couple examples. Richard Dawkins, he wrote a book 2 years ago called The God Delusion. And in this book, he says a lot of things, but one thing he says is that belief in God is delusional and that Christian parents are actually engaging in a form of child abuse by forcing blind faith on their children. Another guy, Christopher Hitchens, he wrote a book a couple years ago called God Is Not Great, and the subtitle was How Religion Poisons Everything. And in there, he basically argues that we ought to just almost eradicate religion because we'd be much better off if there wasn't religion and if there wasn't Christianity, because all these evil things are done in the name of God. A guy named Sam Harris, his first book, he's written a couple now, his first book was called A Letter to a Christian Nation, and in that one he said that the biblical God is a fiction, like Zeus and thousands of other dead gods, who most sane human beings now ignore. So basically we're told that we'd be much better off if we just sort of throw off the shackles of religion, if we stop worrying about this celestial big brother in the sky, and we just sort of enjoy our freedom, just live life the way that we want. In fact, there's this billboard ad that the British Humanist Association ran a couple years ago. They all across the country, they had a billboard campaign, and I've got a picture here. You probably can't see it so well, but they put these on buses and billboards. This is the British Humanist Society, and this is what it says. It says, "There's probably no God, and stop worrying and enjoy life." There's probably no God. Now stop worrying and enjoy life. Okay, so what do we say about these claims? There's a lot that's being said here. Let me try to summarize sort of the new atheist position on this question, is Christianity good for the world? And you can kind of summarize it in 3 points. The first point is that the atheist would claim is, well, there's no God. That's sort of the first thing. It's kind of important. If there's no... Still on? Yeah, if there's no God, and the reason why they say that is because God has become scientifically irrelevant. In other words, we can explain all of reality, everything that needs explaining, we can do it without God, through science. And the things that we don't know yet, well, science will eventually figure that out. So God's irrelevant, there is no God. So that's sort of the first plank in the atheist case. But then they actually level their guns at Christianity. Their second point, the second plank, is that Christianity is immoral. It's actually immoral. And why is it immoral? Well, a couple reasons. One, it's oppressive. It's oppressive because it robs you of your freedom. It constrains the way that you live. There's this malevolent guy in the sky who's kind of got, you know, lightning bolts with your name on it, just sitting up there ready to throw them down at the first chance he can. And also, it makes religious people become intolerant and do all these evil things in the name of God. So Christianity is immoral. That's the second claim that the new atheists are making today. And the third claim, to me, the third claim is the most bold, actually. And here's the third claim. Well, atheism is good for the world, not Christianity. Okay. So these are the three claims of the atheists, of the new atheist movement that's out there right now. Let me just consider each of those, and let's sort of assess it a little bit here. What about that first claim, that there is no God? Now, what's interesting to me about this claim is that... the new atheists actually present themselves as arriving at this position through intellectual inquiry. But the reality is they really haven't. And it's actually embarrassing as a philosopher to read some of the books and to read the arguments that they're giving, because they're sort of like, they're things that have been repackaged, but there's nothing new there. And the reality is there's lots of things that naturalism and atheism can't explain. For example, there's this age-old question, why is there something rather than nothing? How do we explain the universe? And really, I would argue the best explanation is, well, because God created it. The other option, the atheist option, is it's just here. It's just sort of a brute fact. There's no accounting for it. But it's not just the universe itself. You could sort of dip into the universe and say, and look at, pull out all these different phenomena and say, well, what best explains these phenomena? And again, the answer is going to be theism and Christianity. Things like consciousness itself, that we can think, that we have minds. Things like freedom, the apparent physical and biological design that we see in nature, the laws of nature itself, objective morality, and a whole host of other things that I would argue are best explained given the existence of a God. What's interesting, this happened 2 years ago, there's this guy named Anthony Flew. He's a really renowned atheist philosopher. For probably about 50 years, he'd been defending atheism at sort of the top level as a philosopher. But just 2 years ago, he actually realized that he now thinks that God exists. He thinks that the evidence points to God. But what's interesting about this is he did this because of the scientific evidence. So science isn't irrelevant. In fact, science actually supports belief in God. So here's what Anthony Flew said. Let me just read one sentence. He said, "My discovery of the divine has proceeded on a purely naturalistic level." In other words, just looking at our world. And as we look at the world and try to make sense of it, the best explanation is that God exists. He said, without any reference to supernatural phenomena, things like miracles and stuff like that. Okay, so a lot of times, like what Richard Dawkins does, you could deny some of these phenomena. So Richard Dawkins denies that there is objective morality. But notice, the minute that you do that, well, then how can you say that Christianity is not good because there is no such thing as objective goodness given a God-absent world? And so you kind of hoist yourself on your own petard when you begin to deny some of these things and then make these claims. But the view that science makes God irrelevant is actually wrong-headed. So I'll just say just two things and we'll move on. For one thing, the claim that we can only know things through science is actually self-refuting if you think about it. The claim itself isn't known through science. It's a philosophical claim about the nature of science. But beyond that, there's many things that we know that extend beyond science. Things like moral judgments or things related to meaning and purpose in life or love itself. These are things that science can't really explain. And beyond that, the possibility of doing science itself is actually predicated on these assumptions, these faith assumptions, that really make the most sense given a theistic universe. Things like the uniformity of nature, the fact that the language of the laws of nature is mathematics, which really points and is the best fit with a mind behind it. The fact that we can know and discover the laws of nature itself. All these things are most at home within a theistic universe, not an atheistic or naturalistic universe. Okay, so that's the first point. The reality is there's plenty of evidence for belief in God. All right, well, what about the second claim in the atheist plank? This claim that Christianity itself is actually immoral. What about that? Well, again, the idea is that God sort of has made us live in a moral straitjacket, that we're robbed of our freedom, we're constrained, and we're forced to sort of love and follow this big brother, the celestial big brother in the sky. Now, this sort of a claim that's behind this idea that Christianity is immoral, it's got two problems with it, two confusions, and it'd be helpful sort of to unravel these confusions. The first one's a confusion related to the nature of freedom itself, and then the second one's a confusion related to Christianity. Let's take the freedom issue first. So freedom merely can't be described in negative terms, right, as the absence of constraint. That's usually how it's... Christianity's, we're told, is immoral because it constrains us. But you can't define freedom as the absence of constraints, because constraints actually often lead us to greater freedom. For example, suppose I wanted to become the best tennis player in the world, and there was a time when I wanted to. Well, in order to do that, I actually need to constrain myself in many ways so that I can be led actually into greater freedom to be able to do things at a higher level. But to do that, I need to constrain myself. And what's interesting, though, just because I constrain myself in all the ways necessary towards becoming the best tennis player in the world, this was my delusion in high school, it doesn't follow that I'll automatically attain that goal, right? Because I might run into a physical reality. Maybe I'm not that talented. And that's, in fact, pains me to say that. But here's my point. Disciplines and constraints liberate us, actually, when they fit our nature. when they fit the reality of our nature and our capacities. So some constraints actually liberate us. Take a fish, for example. It's constrained by water. It's constrained by water, but that actually liberates him, because the minute he jumps out of your aquarium, he's going to be dead. So he's liberated in the environment, even though he's constrained by it. Okay, so constraints liberate us when they fit the reality of the nature of our nature and capacities. Okay, so if that's the confusion about freedom, let's move over to Christianity and the confusion there. So according to Christianity, what is the environment that liberates us then? What is it that allows us to flourish? What is the environment that actually helps us to become more free? Well, according to Christianity, that environment is love, actually. One theologian, Timothy Keller, he says that love is the most liberating freedom loss of all. In other words, human beings, you and I, are most free when we're in relationships of love. But of course, there's constraints, right? And I, as a married man with four kids, I certainly know this. And you know this too. There's constraints. Because in these kind of loving relationships, we need to deny self and sort of mutually serve each other. And there's a loss of independence there. But really, this leads to greater freedom, because this is the environment that we were created for. Now, at first sight, when the atheist claims that Christianity is immoral, they would have you think that a relationship with God is inherently dehumanizing, right? That it's God's way or no way. That you're just forced to do, to love God in the sort of robotic way. Now, this might be true of some religions, but it's not true of Christianity. In fact, in the most radical way, God adjusted to us. And he entered into human history. He took on a human nature. He died in our place so that we could flourish, so that we could actually experience true freedom. Okay, so the claim that Christianity is immoral is based on these confusions. All right, let's look at the last claim. Like I said, this is the most bold in my mind, the claim that atheism is actually good for the world. Now, if atheism is good for the world, one's sort of hard-pressed to see why. Consider again the ad on that bus. There's probably no God, so we should just enjoy our life. But the question is this: is it really possible to enjoy our life if there is no God, in the absence of God? Is genuine happiness, is genuine meaning even possible in a godless universe? The reality is, if there's no afterlife, if there's no meaning, if there's no purpose, well, then life is just deathbound, and there is no meaning and purpose. In fact, my favorite atheist, a guy named Bertrand Russell, whenever I teach philosophy, this is my foil, is Bertrand Russell. He wrote a little book in the 1920s. He died about 1972, but in the 1920s, he wrote a book called Why I Am Not a Christian. It was a really popular book at the time. It's kind of like before Richard Dawkins, there was Bertrand Russell. And in this book, he's got a chapter called A Free Man's Worship, and it's a wonderful chapter. And in it, this is what he says. I think he's very clear. He says, if man is just the accidental outcome of the collocation of atoms, then all we can do is build our life on the firm foundation of unyielding despair. If man is just the accidental outcome of the collocation of atoms, then all we can do is build our lives on the firm foundation of unyielding despair. Now, not all atheists are that consistent, but when you try to maintain hope in a godless world, I think the options turn out to be sort of rather grim and barbaric. Really, there's two options. You could be a Stoic, I think this is Bertrand Russell's route, where you could sort of grin and bear the pain. You could be a Stoic, or you could be an Epicurean, where we just deaden the pain in a sea of pleasure. But either way, the reality is hope is dashed on the cold rocks of fate. And the question remains, how can thinking men and women find hope if all of life is deathbound? The truth is that the British Humanist Society is misleading, because if God doesn't exist, the last thing that we should be doing is enjoying life. So atheism is profoundly false, and here's why. It misconstrues reality at the most fundamental level, because at the most fundamental level, reality is relational. It's love. Okay, so let's get to the second point. It's important to understand that what the voices are that would say that Christianity is not good for the world. And hopefully that can clear some space, because now we want to move to the question, well, why is it good for the world? Why do Christians say it's good? Now, one thing that's interesting, Christians aren't the only ones who say Christianity is good for the world. In fact, many atheists do as well. A couple of years ago, 2008, there's a journalist, his name was Matthew Paris. He's a foreign correspondent, and he was working in Africa, and he wrote an article for the Times Online. And listen to the headline here. It's going to come up on the screen here. This is what he said. This is his headline. "As an atheist, I truly believe Africa needs God." Listen to what he said there. He said, "Now a confirmed atheist, I've become convinced of the enormous contribution that Christian evangelism makes in Africa." Christian evangelism, not meeting the needs of the poor. He's saying sharing about Jesus. He says, "Sharply distinct from the work of secular NGOs, government projects, and international aid efforts. These alone will not do. Education and training alone will not do. In Africa, Christianity changes people's hearts. It brings a spiritual transformation. The rebirth is real. The change is good." The change is good. Now, I say that Christianity is good for the world, and for at least two reasons. Like I said, because it's true, and being rightly related to reality is a good thing in and of itself. And secondly, because you get Jesus. And when you get Jesus, you get everything. Remember the question beneath the question? How can we find peace? How can we find happiness? Well, we all try to find that in many different ways, but the reality is we can't quite find it. And look at our world. It's in constant revolution because we're looking for peace and for happiness in this rich sense of the word. And the reality is human flourishing, peace, happiness begins and it ends with Jesus. I heard it said once that Jesus plus nothing is everything. Jesus plus nothing is everything. So Christianity is true. I've already sort of mentioned the fact that it's Christianity and not atheism that best explains the phenomena of our everyday experience. In fact, when I teach philosophy, I usually take a week on each of those phenomena and try to map out why Christianity is a better explanation of the facts than atheism. And I just want to suggest to you tonight, though, that it's not a lack of evidence. It's not for lack of evidence that we fail to believe in God. In fact, I think that people fail to believe in God for something wholly different. And let me just share another quote, another philosopher's guy. This guy's name is Thomas Nagel. He's a pretty important philosopher today, and he wrote this book called The Last Word. And this is what he says. I think it's pretty revealing. I think there's a slide up there as well. He says, "I hope there is no God. I don't want there to be a God. I don't want the universe to be like that. I hope there is no God. I don't want there to be a God. I don't want the universe to be like that." Now, later on in the same book, Nagel says that I have a cosmic authority issue. This is what he says about himself. I have a cosmic authority issue. And what Nagel's comments reveal, I think they're pretty honest, is that skepticism about God isn't about evidence. It's about a moral issue. There's something else going on there. We don't want there to be a God. We don't want the universe to be like that. Or so we think. And so the question really before us is, well, what's going on then? If it's not about evidence, if it's something else, if it's this moral issue, if it's this cosmic authority issue, well, how do we make sense of that? And what I want to do really for the rest of my time tonight is to answer that, is to unpack the great story of God in the Bible. And help that'll sort of help us understand how to make sense of this cosmic authority issue and really what's going on in this debate and how to make sense of it, okay? And then what I want to do also, I understand that you guys have been doing some interesting events here this past week or week and a half. You had a coffee house where you sort of try to understand some of the connections between Jesus and beauty or Jesus and the arts. And so I want to draw some connections there at the end as we do this. And then you also had one night where you showed a documentary, a debate between Christopher Hitchens, one of these new atheists, and Doug Wilson, who is a Christian, on this very question, is Christianity good for the world? And so you're drawing the connections between Jesus and ideas, and so I want to connect some dots there. And then I understand that you had one night where you had a banquet where you invited people from all the nations, from other countries, and explore the connections between Jesus and the nations. And so I want to connect some of those dots as well. So that's where we're headed just for the last couple minutes here. Now, okay, recall the questions tonight. The main question is Christianity good for the world? And the question beneath the question is, how can we find peace? How can we find shalom? Now, perhaps the best way to express this longing for peace and shalom is to use what I take to be the closest metaphor for life. And that's actually the metaphor of a home. If you think about it, we all live in homes, right? Maybe many of you don't live in ideal houses here at Ball State. I don't know. When I went to Miami of Ohio, just down the road, for my undergraduate years, and I lived my junior and senior year, I lived with a bunch of guys, and we had one bathroom. And so it was not the most ideal situation for us. In fact, when we tried to clean that thing, which was maybe once a semester, we would literally get some Lysol and, you know, tie a rope around our waist, and somebody would be thrown in there with the Lysol, you know, on fire. And in a couple minutes, he'd be pulled out and barely breathing. Not quite, but it was pretty bad. We didn't live in an ideal home. And I know in a room this big, many of you don't live in ideal homes. And maybe you don't come from an ideal home. Maybe you come from a broken home. But I also think that we all in our hearts have an idea of an ideal home. We have a picture in our mind of what an ideal home would be. Maybe it's a home with a wraparound porch. Maybe it's a Thomas Kincaid kind of picture. I don't know. Maybe it's got fireplaces that are always lit and lots of light and a stream that goes through the backyard. But it's more than the physical surroundings, right, that makes an ideal home. Because a home is where you belong. A home is a place where we're known and where we know and where we invite people in and we experience life the way it's supposed to be. This is the picture of an ideal home. And to sort of carry the metaphor, each day we get up and we leave. We go away. And we spend our day at school, in class, hanging out with friends, going to work, only at the end of the day to return home. So if you wanted to summarize the rhythm of your life, you could do it in four words. Home, away, and home again. Home, away, and home again. This is really the rhythm of our lives. And what's interesting is that this is also a good summary of the overarching story of the Bible. Early on in the first chapters, actually, Genesis chapter 1 and 2, we read of God creating a home. He creates a place and he creates a people. And it's the way that it's supposed to be. It's a place where humans can flourish. It's a place where you belong. And you read this in Genesis chapter 1 and chapter 2. Home. And then early on, flip the page to the third chapter of the Bible, Genesis chapter 3. And the first humans decide they're going to try to meet their own needs. They're going to try to find peace, shalom, happiness, their own way. And what happens is they become away. And really from Genesis chapter 3 to the end of the story, it's a story of God's rescue mission, where he's wooing us through our desires to come home. So it's home, away, and home again. And the culmination of this story, and this rescue mission that God is on, the culmination of this, of course, is Jesus. And the coming of Jesus. And this is sort of the door or the way back home. And so let me just unpack that part of the story a little bit more. So in love, God sends his son to earth, and he sends us to earth to solve that cosmic authority problem. Remember that issue that Nagel had, this cosmic authority issue? The Bible just calls it sin. You heard that earlier. So we all have this problem, by the way. I've got the cosmic authority problem. You've got it. We've all got it. And because of sin, though, the world is turned upside down. That's what happens early on. The world is turned upside down. Shalom is violated. We're alienated from God, and there's nothing that we can do to restore this peace. There's nothing we can do on our own to restore it. And the Bible talks about the consequence of this, the consequence of our sin, of our cosmic authority issue, is separation. It's alienation and separation from God. And that just and it's death, actually, spiritual separation from God. And this is where we find ourselves when God sends his son, when God sends Jesus. And it's important to understand the coming of Jesus is first and foremost an historical event that occurred outside of you and me, but it occurred for me and it occurred for you. So Jesus comes, he lives his perfect life, he's killed on a cross, he raises from the dead, and he did this, by the way, he raises from the dead, and he did this to pay the penalty for our sin, so that we could experience shalom, so that we could experience and know God the way that we were intended to. And what's interesting about the cross is the intersection of God's justice, right? Somebody's got to pay this penalty, but and his love. It's the intersection of God's justice
and God's love. That's what the cross is. And this is why it's the good news. The good news is that peace is possible. We have an answer to our question. Peace is possible only through Jesus. And this is how love invaded our planet, by the way. Now, earlier I said that I want to set before you the possibility that God is better than you think. Let me tell you why. It's not that God created you. He did create you. But God is better than you think because He pursues you. He pursues every one of you. And He's given everything that He has on your behalf. In fact, C.S. Lewis, he said it this way. He said, in Christianity, the human soul is not the seeker, but the sought. It is God who seeks. It is God who descends from the other world to find and to heal man. In Christianity, the human soul is not the seeker, but the sought. God is better than you think because God pursues you. Could it be that you're longing for peace and happiness is really just a longing for home? And could it be that your longing for home is really a longing for God? Christianity is good for the world because it's true and because you get Jesus. Let me connect a few dots. Because you get Jesus, you get to not only see beauty in art, in people, in the world, in a sunset. You get more than merely seeing beauty. And C.S. Lewis said, God knows that ought to be enough, right? But because you get Jesus, you actually get to be united with beauty itself. Remember that phrase from Augustine, Jesus is the beauty of all things beautiful. So because you get Jesus, you get to be united with the beauty that you see. Because you get Jesus, now we learn in the New Testament, there's this little book, letter called Colossians, chapter 2, verse 3, where it says that in Christ are hidden all treasures of wisdom and knowledge. So because you get Jesus, you get that in which all truth, everything that you study, you get that in which all knowledge points. And finally, what about this connection between Jesus and the nations? Because you get Jesus, you get to invite people of all nations into a relationship with this God who pursues. In fact, it's interesting. If you remember remember Genesis chapter 1, 2, and 3, there's a lot that happened there. Well, actually, it got a little worse. Genesis 3, man becomes a way. And then from Genesis 3, really to Genesis 11, it gets worse and worse and worse. And when you end up in Genesis chapter 10, you have this sort of really boring chapter in the Bible, and it's just this list of people from every tribe and tongue and nation that are on the planet at the time. And what this was a list of every people from all tongues, tribes, and nations that are in need of being saved, rescued by God, that are in need of being redeemed by God. And so then you flip over from Genesis 10, and then God calls this one person, Abraham, and he says, look, I'm going to make you a great nation, and through you and your descendants, you're going to bless all the nations. So then God calls out this one person and says, through you and your descendants, which include Christ, you will bless all the nations. And then you go all the way to the end of the story, Revelation. This is the end of the story, chapter 7, verse 9. And there you read about a great multitude of people from every tongue and tribe and nation that are redeemed, that are rescued, and that sit around the throne of God and worship God. And you could draw a line from Genesis 10, and all the nations, all the people who are unredeemed, through Christ, through this room, to the end of the story with all the nations. And that line goes right through this room. That God is a God who pursues every one of you, no matter where you're from, what tribe, what tongue, what nation. Okay, so what's needed on our part? Well, in short, to believe and to respond. God's part is finished on the cross. Our part is to receive Jesus as the light, as we heard earlier, and the life that He is. In fact, there's this verse in the Gospels. These are the four sort of biographies of Christ in the New Testament. One of those is the Gospel of John, chapter 1, verse 12, where it says, to all who received Him, to those who believed in His name, He gave the right to become children of God. God is better than you think because He pursues you. He wants you to become His child. Is Christianity good for the world? Yes. It's good for the world because it's true and because you get Jesus. And when you get Jesus, you get everything. Thank you.
I want to make a point that Paul actually came here from Orlando this morning to speak specifically to us, and he's going back there tomorrow. And so can we give Paul another round of applause for making a special trip here? If you guys have any more questions, you can feel free to come down and talk to Lydia or myself. I'm sure Paul will be around for a while to talk to you. If you have anything you want to ask him or just want to know more information, please talk to us. We want to invite you, whether you come here or not regularly to Crew. We do meet on Thursday nights at this time every week. And so, yeah, we just want to be inviting to have you guys, if you want to know more about Jesus or know more about why Christianity is good for the world, just keep coming back and we'll talk about Jesus every week. So.
And I just want to challenge you guys to think about kind of one of the last things that Paul said, just about how are you going to respond to this. His answer was clearly, yes, Christianity is good for the world. So ask the why questions, and yeah, keep pursuing knowing more about that. And we are going to hear a little more of the story that we've been hearing throughout the night. And yeah, I just want to thank Christine Wyatt. She's a sophomore here at Ball State, and she wrote the monologue and the monologues and dialogue that you heard tonight. So if you see her, thank her. But yeah, have a good spring break, and I hope you guys enjoy the rest of the story.